Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And now, here's John Roy.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, kids, here we go. We're off and running. We're that much closer to Patriots Colts on Sunday. Super Bowl 41 and a half, as it has been described. My name is John Rook. We welcome you inside the Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. Pats and Colts at 4:15 Eastern Time on Sunday at the RCA Dome to decide, at least for this week, who's on top. Who's the best team in the NFL, or at least who's got the inside track. Who's the best team in the AFC to this point in time is really what they'll be determining on Sunday. But as we've talked about this far this week, it really doesn't mean a whole lot. What it really means is that the team still that wins on Sunday still has a chance to stay undefeated. And even though that will still be difficult, whoever wins. And the only real thing that is won on Sunday is a leg up and home field advantage for the AFC playoffs. That's it. That's all that's really on the line. Not to mention, though, of course, the fact that you've got, you know, real bragging rights and people are going to be taking pot shots at you, whoever survives this battle. And of course, that's the intrigue about it. I know that the Colts, deep down, have to feel somewhat, I don't know, I want to say miffed. It's probably a little bit too strong. But I'm guessing that, you know, they're probably raising an eyebrow and then they're probably chuckling about it, much like the Patriots did a few years ago when they were not well respected around the league for what they were doing. And here are the Patriots coming in, and the Colts have won 12 in a row at home. And, you know, and so they're the defending Super Bowl champs, and now they're 5-point underdogs in their own building. I can understand why fans would have a problem with that. The players are probably internalizing that, if it bothers them at all. Just adds to the intrigue. On the program coming up, as Fred mentioned, Mike Chappell, who covers the Colts for the Indianapolis Star and IndyStar.com, he's going to join us in just a little bit. And we'll get the Colts perspective on this entire week of going back and forth. We will also hear from Russell Baxter, of course, is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN. We hear from him every Thursday on the show. We'll talk Colts, Pats. We'll also take a look at some of the other matchups around the NFL. And believe it or not, there are other games. The entire league is not laying down for the Patriots and Colts this Sunday, although some think they probably should. But we'll take a look at a couple of the other games. But obviously, this is the key matchup, and he will join us in approximately 40 minutes as well. And time permitting today, because we got so much to get to, and I want to include your emails as well with your predictions for Sunday. Let's go, kids. Fire them off. Some of you have already done that. We've got a ton of emails here that we have not gotten to in the last hour of the program, so we're going to do whatever we can to get to those, plus a few choice ones over the course of off live air programming when people are podcasting and people are listening to the replays on the website and such like that. We want to take as much as we can from you. So fire off your score predictions. webradio@patriots.com. Predict the score for Sunday. How's it going to turn out? What's it going to come down to? Where is the difference going to be between the Patriots and Colts? And especially if you're a Colts fan, I really want to hear from you. Specifically want to hear from you. Because I know you feel like your team's going to win, so tell me why you think your team will win this game. That's what I want to know. Come on, stand up for your team. If you think they'll win, let's go. Let's hear it. And, of course, Patriots fans, I'm sure you think the Pats will win. So tell me why, and tell me what you think the score will be. I'm going to give you my score prediction coming up a little bit later on in the program, but it's time to fire it off. webradio@patriots.com. Do that. In addition to Russell, as I mentioned, time permitting, we get inside the Patriots locker room with interviews with the Patriots players. And we also have a conference call from Tony Dungy, the head coach of the Colts, that originally took place yesterday. And time permitting, we'll get to that simply because he was asked about his comments in the aftermath of Spygate. And sort of comparing Bill Belichick and the entire situation to what was going on with Barry Bonds. And I thought that was sort of poignant, and he did a little backpedaling on that, and I thought you might like to hear that in case you hadn't had a chance to do that. So time permitting, we'll get to that. But we want to get inside the locker room and hear from the players because they're the ones that will actually be out on the field and actually exchanging hits and trying to win the game on Sunday, and there's where the focus is, and so that's where we'll keep our focus inside the playbook. So as you can tell, we got a lot of stuff to get to today, ton of stuff to get to today. What time is Mike joining us, Gary? Okay, he's going to join us here in a couple of minutes. Let's get to a couple of emails before he joins us. Coming up, this one's from William in Hattiesburg, who says, the constant complaining about the way New England has beaten teams this year is just tiresome. An offense is on the field to score, period. They aren't paid millions to be the greatest time-of-possession team with no points. These guys have an opportunity to have a special year and break some historical prestigious records, so I say go for it. These are professional teams they play against and not some cupcake college schedule. I'm proud and have always been proud of the Pats, win or lose, even in 91 and 92 when we hit rock bottom, we've come a long way. In those years, I didn't ask for mercy or another team to show respect and take it easy on us. Keep it up, Coach B, Tom, Randy, West, Dante, Teddy, Adelis. Take it to the Colts. That's what we've been talking about all week. Thanks, William. Absolutely. I mean, why should you let up? You absolutely shouldn't. You're a paid professional. Do the job that you're paid to do. And don't worry about what anybody says. Worry about what, you know, your teammate next to you might say or do. But other than that, I wouldn't worry about what anybody says. Worry about what your coach might say to you. He's the one you have to play for. Dave, where is Dave from? Let's see if we can get a... He's from Alexandria, Virginia. After all of the hype on the running up the score debate, I laughed when I learned that the Dolphins blew out the Pats during their perfect season 52-0 with two of the touchdowns occurring in the fourth quarter by long passes. Yeah, that's true, and we've talked about that. As for Mike Wilbon, his comments on hitting Brady in the fourth quarter and taking the penalty, he's lost a fan. A press guy advocating intentionally hurting another player because of something like running up the score crosses the line. Okay, there you go. I have to admit, that surprised me as well. It's something he blogged on his website, and I was a little shocked by that as well. I mentioned that last night on ESPN. I'm stunned that he would say something like that. Maybe he said it offhanded. Maybe he said it to be flip. But I agree with you in that respect. For someone in the media who has influence over what he says and does, I think that was disrespectful to the game. And I also thought it was I just thought it was unnecessary. Unnecessary. Todd in Nova Scotia says, it's 8 p.m. I'm sitting in my living room listening to a podcast. I've had a few beverages. let's see. He says, I nearly choked on an ice in my Ryan Coke. I mean, Pepsi. Got to pay those bills. When I hear Tom is dressing up his dog. Oh, we were talking about Halloween last night. By the way, my 12-year-old last night did a tremendous job. Tremendous job. Brought back better than 300 pieces. He counted them all. Shocking. We actually had a pretty good crowd last night, although I think it was a little smaller than previous years. We live in one of those, you know, all-kid neighborhoods where, you know, they actually truck in the kids from other neighborhoods just because of the neighborhood we live in. We have the proverbial Beaver Cleaver neighborhood where I live. So I had a great candy stash, and it's probably going to be with us until Christmas. And I'm also here to say that I think bottle caps are a highly underrated Halloween candy. Sugar Rush last night really kind of kept me going between 2 and 6 a.m., so. Todd says, Pats 38, Indy 20. That's his score prediction. Let's see. All right, some of these things are still here to the PFW guys, so I'll leave them for them. This one comes. Well, see, I can't even tell where this one comes from because they don't live. You got to give us a name here, and it would be best if you didn't write a two-page email, just as an aside. Let's see. More than once you've mentioned the Colts, we unnecessarily run the score. What? Oh, this is to PFW. Fine, no problem. His prediction, Colts 42, Pats 35. This is from Lawrence. He says, I double dare Belichick to try to run up the score. I usually watch the game from Oregon, but my job is sending me to Boston for a few days, so I'll be watching my Colts beat the Pats from the Cape. Since I bought lunch for you clowns after the AFC Championship, do I get the tour of the stadium if I drop by on Tuesday? We giving him a tour of the stadium? Is he going to bring lunch?
No.
Well, you know, I think he should bring lunch, maybe especially if the Patriots win. But Lawrence from Westland, Oregon says, Colts 42, Pats 35. All right. Ethan in Delaware, I'd be willing to toss in $20 to Eric's charity raffle. I'll donate my tickets to Tom so we can get his portrait. All right, PFW stuff. Thank you, fellas. I was listening to the podcast this morning and I have to agree with you guys on the smart play being both teams taking away the pass. Going into nickel, I would not be surprised if the Patriots went with a big nickel and allowed Harrison to float down into a linebacker position and work some of the short routes and run support. This is doubly true if Seymour is ready to start. Take away the pass, then put the game in the hands of your three first-round linemen, and they either stop a die or they don't. I think the Colts' D plays nickel. Make sure that nothing goes long. Cover the short routes. Keep Welker and Watson from exploiting the middle. Patriots have not really run on anyone this year, so take away the pass. Make Maroney and Falk prove they can do it. Personally, and this is though through the Patriots' colored glasses, should be taken with a shaker full of salt. I like the Patriots' D-line with Seymour in. I think that Maroney behind the O-line can win the battle. That's Ethan in Delaware. All right, let's go to the phones now and welcome in Mike Chappell, who covers the Colts for the Indianapolis Star. Mike, long time no talk to you, pal. Thanks for the time today.
My pleasure. What can we do for you? Is there a game this week or something?
I know. No kidding. You know, certainly from this vantage point, Patriots fans feel like there is absolutely nothing that can slow down what they're describing as a juggernaut of an offense. And you and I had this discussion a bit last night, but in another venue. But quite frankly, the way that the Colts have, you know, brought their defense into play this year, kind of piggybacking on what they did during their championship run last year, has been impressive. What has been a major difference, to your estimation, that they've been able to kind of continue that kind of play?
Number 21's played, Bob Sanders. You hate to put it on one guy, but he misses 12 games last year. He comes back for the playoffs, and they get on this run. He's missed one game this year. He just makes a difference. You know, there's a handful of players who aren't the big pass rusher, you know, a Freeney or a, you know, Michael Strahan or whatever, that make a difference. And he does. He just makes plays, and he lifts the play of people around him to another level. And again, on top of that, they've got new people in the lineup. They're two new corners, Marlon Jackson, Kelvin Hayden. They're playing very well, very physical. The linebackers are playing a lot better this year. There were a lot of missed tackles last year by linebackers, and that's not been the case this year. It's just been a very sound, solid defense, really the way it's supposed to be running in Dungy's eyes. You know, keep things in front of you, make tackles when they're there, make people drive on you. That's why this is going to be a huge challenge this week, because that's really not been what New England's been all about. They've been kind of, you know, quick striking, let's get off the field. That's not what the Colts are all about defensively.
You know, I would say that, you know, basically looking at these two teams offensively, that, you know, what they might want to do is just try to work on a little ball control themselves to keep it out of the other team's offensive hands.
Yeah, really. I think it's kind of funny. I look at this Colts team, and that's I wouldn't want to disrespect Peyton Manning and say he's managing games, because sometimes, you know, Trent Dilfer manages games. But that's really what they've been. They've been about no mistakes, take what's there. If it's underneath all day, that's what we do. If it's running the ball, that's what we do. But I think you're right. It's instead of giving Manning and Brady, you know, 12 possessions each, because they're going to score six or seven times, mm-hmm. you know, limit the possessions. And but I tell you, I just – each of these teams, like they like to strike when they can, and from what the few times I've seen New England, really like to take their shots, or even get one-on-ones where maybe a stalwart breaks a tackle and takes it the distance. And it's going to be really interesting to see what goes on, because I just I really think there's going to be a lot of points scored. There has to be, but there's going to be a couple of defensive plays that somebody's going to make, whether it's Rodney Harrison or Sanders or Darius Thomas or Freeney. That's going to make the difference.
Yeah, you brought up a key player, is Dwight Freeney. Now, because in the past, the Patriots' offensive line certainly has had trouble with speed ends. You know, guys like Jason Taylor, guys like Aaron Schobel, certainly Dwight Freeney falls in that category. And the Patriots have gotten outstanding play from the offensive line thus far this year. Matt Leida is really is maybe his best year yet. I think it's a huge key to the game whether or not Indianapolis's, you know, front four can actually put some kind of pressure on Brady to make him throw early and not allow plays to unfold.
Boy, it seems like Brady likes to throw the ball early too, but though, because they throw a lot of that short slants to Stallworth and Welker, and you know, I had Freeney today. How do you not get frustrated when that's all they've seen this year, really, for the most part, these short drops, and teams averaging, you know, 5 yards an attempt and 7 yards of completion. But Brady does that, and he gets big plays out of it. But somehow, some way, you've got to get pressure on both Manning and Brady. And the Colts don't blitz a lot. They really require their front four to do it. Now, maybe they change up something this week. I don't know. But, yeah, I tell you, with both Brady and Manning, if you're going to blitz them, you better get there because you've left somebody vulnerable somewhere, and Manning is expert at finding it, and so is Brady.
No doubt. And I think the middle of the field is going to get worked and worked hard by both quarterbacks between Dallas Clark with the Colts, and if we've got Benjamin Watson back healthy and he has returned to practice to participate this week, I think those are two huge keys as well. Both of these teams defensively are going to kind of play back a bit and try not to get beat deep. In other words, keep the action in front of them, as you already alluded to. So I think the middle of the field is going to be big.
Yeah, and really that's where Dallas Clark, he's just – when you've got Harrison and Wayne outside, the middle of the field is got to be open because you can only double and pay attention to so many people with so many people. And that's why Clark, in the AFC title game last year, he had a couple of huge plays down the middle. And that's what they love to do. They like to get Clark down the middle, maybe Anthony Gonzalez this week down the middle. So and Brady's the same way. Like if you pay so much attention outside, the middle of the field, that's where it's kind of fertile ground.
Sure. Mike Chappell covers the Colts for the Indy Star. He's with us here inside the Patriots playbook. Mike, who in particular on this team has surprised in terms of his overall performance that maybe you weren't sure what you'd get?
Probably Tony Hugo, the left tackle. They take him in the second round in April, give up next year's first-round pick for him with the idea that in 2008, when Tariq Glenn was gone, probably going to be gone, then it's Hugo's position. And Tariq Glenn kind of throws him a curve in June or July, whatever it was, and retires. And all of a sudden, Tony Hugo's learning curve was accelerated. They put him in at left tackle first day of training camp, and he's been there ever since. He's missed a game with a shoulder and ankle, whichever it was. But he's played pretty well. He's had a couple of hiccups in short stretches. Played pretty well. You put your quarterback's back in the hands of a rookie, and that says – much about your confidence in the guy. And for the most part, he's played pretty well. We just didn't know what we were getting, whether he was ready to play, but he's played very well.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. And I would also add, just because you mentioned Hugo on the offensive line, that one of my favorite players in terms of offensive linemen to watch is Jeff Saturday. I think the guy is as solid as a rock, literally. And I'm watching yesterday a couple of times on NFL Network the replay of the AFC Championship game. And on the late touchdown, Saturday just flattened Vince Wilfork, and I'm sure it's something that Wilfork's going to remember going into the game this Sunday.
Yeah, we talked to Jeff Saturday about that. He tries to downplay it because that's the kind of guy he is, but that's one of those where, if you're an offensive lineman, that's your play.
Absolutely.
Because that's how often do you get a one-on-one with a guy, and really, whether you got leverage or the guy tripped or whatever, you put him on his back on the winning drive, right, of the biggest game. And Jeff Saturday has sort of been unheralded across the league. The last 2 years, he's finally getting his due by going to the Pro Bowl, and He sort of is the glue to that whole offense, because all the stuff that Manning does, if you watch at the line of scrimmage, Saturday's doing the same stuff as far as getting the calls to his linemen, and pretty quality player, and not bad for a guy that before he joined the Colts, he was selling electro equipment in North Carolina.
Unbelievable. I think he's a great player. Now, one of the key matchups, I think, if we're looking man-on-man, has to be a guy like a Marvin Harrison maybe might line up against Asante Samuel. Both had missed time in practice this week. Samuel returned today, was away yesterday for a personal matter. How is Marvin Harrison doing?
Good question. I was out there before practice today for a few minutes, and he was in shorts and a sweatshirt or shirt and not in pads, so I don't think he's practicing today, and he was supposed to practice today. And Tony Dungy today said that if he doesn't practice today, he said he's probably doubtful for Sunday. Now, he can come out and practice tomorrow or whatever, but what people have to understand is Marvin Harrison practices every day. Mm-hmm. He never misses practice unless there's something wrong. So this isn't a case of keeping his leg fresh or whatever. He's having a problem with that left knee, and I think it's going to be a huge loss if he's not out there, because you need everything. You don't want to come in here without, would Tom Brady like to go in here without Randy Moss? Probably not. So I think it'll be a big loss for him. They'll compensate the way they always do. But if he didn't practice today, which it doesn't look like he is, and tomorrow, the Colts could be somewhat shorthanded on Sunday.
Could he still practice tomorrow and conceivably play in your estimation?
Sure. Yeah. That's why it's kind of funny. Whenever you're doing your stories and you're putting these injury things in your notebooks and all this on Wednesday and Thursday, it just doesn't matter a lot.
Right.
The way these guys work, if you practice Friday, you're generally okay. Like yesterday, Dwight Freeney did not practice. Well, everybody said, wow, Dwight Freeney didn't practice. What's up? Well, he never practices. There's one day a week he never practices.
Mm-hmm.
Today, Bob Sanders won't practice because he never practices on Thursday. But when somebody like Marvin Harrison or maybe a Freddie Keough, I'm not sure what his status is. He had a post-concussion syndrome. When those guys don't practice, it's a concern. Certain guys, they'll get a day off here and there, like I'm sure a lot of players do around the league. It's not a big deal. Marvin Harrison's a big deal.
Yeah, and of course, you guys are a lot like the Patriots in that regard. You know, when the injury reports come out early in the week, you just kind of like, eh, so what? You don't even know what's factual anyway.
Yeah, well, I wonder how Tom Brady's right shoulder is doing. He's on there every week.
Yeah, right, yeah, which is kind of, you know, flaunting it. And another topic for another day, perhaps.
Well, does he have a persistent boil on that shoulder or what? I don't get it.
He's not getting it massaged by Giselle enough.
There you go. That's a topic for another day, isn't it?
I think, yeah, maybe so. We'll kind of steer clear of that one. Overall, I know the hype is great, but how do the fans in Indianapolis feel about being a home dog when you've won 12 in a row at home and being the defending champs?
They're mad as hell, and they don't want to take it anymore. I get some emails, and the people, they really take that personal. How can it be you're the Super Bowl champs, you're unbeaten, you're at home, and you're a 5 or 4 point underdog? It's perception. The perception, you know, for the bettors, that's what they do. They need to get an equal amount of money on both teams, and the perception is nationally is that the Patriots are unstoppable. It's just that's just the way it is. But it's the public has a hard time believing. But I thought it was a 3 or 4 point game, just because again, perception. And what this reminds me of is a couple of years ago. What was it, the title game or the other year when the Colts they laid the wood to Kansas City and Denver, and Manning was just off the charts with whatever it was, 12 touchdowns and an interception, and they went up there with this great team, and you guys had all your corners were all hurt, and you had, it was a Troy Brown playing corner and all
yeah,
this,
right.
And you stuffed them, and you just stuffed them. And I'm not saying that's what the Colts are going to do this week, because you're not going to slow down New England quite that much, but I just get the feeling that with all this hype, and it's not going to be, you know, 56-54. There's going to be a couple of good defensive plays, and I just want to see how this Colts defense, which I think nationally is getting kind of shortchanged on how good it might be. This isn't a powerhouse. This isn't the Bears of 85, but it's a pretty good defense. I want to see how they match up with New England's receivers.
What are your thoughts on whoever ends up losing this game and what it does to their season from here on out?
Well, I think if New England loses, they go 15-1. I don't see I just don't see anybody on the schedule.
Yeah.
At Baltimore, the Ravens can't score. Pittsburgh at home, I just don't. Again, they can't score enough. I really think, and good luck to the New England media, but if New England wins this week, you're going to be writing about 16-0 of the possibilities for the rest of the season, because the way the schedule is. If the Colts lose, what I kind of expect to happen is, and this is just me looking at it, I think the Colts win Sunday and then they lose in San Diego. They go to San Diego next week.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a tough stretch for them. But I think at the end of the season, you're going to have a 14-2 team being the number two seed,
yeah,
which is kind of strange. But that's why, you know, this is just a game. But if you go back through the years, whoever wins this game, and when they meet in the playoffs, that's where the game is.
That's right.
So, you know, if I'm going to meet the Patriots again in January, I'd sure like it to be indoors as opposed to up there in the cold.
No doubt. And so that's why, you know, I mean, even though the overall scheme of things, this game doesn't mean a lot, what it does mean is that whoever does survive it on Sunday has a leg up in the home field advantage race.
And that's not a little thing.
No, it's not a little thing, especially because of what you just said. Hey, the winner of this game has that home field advantage, and they haven't lost yet. So it's kind of interesting scenario. Mike,
yep.
Listen, thanks so much for spending some extra time with our Patriots fans listening in today. And I want you to know, we've had quite a few Colts fans also listening in this program this week, and it just tells me that there's great passion for this matchup. And I do think that the Patriots and Colts is, you know, the 2000s version of the Cowboys and Redskins. I think it's developing to quite a rivalry.
Yeah, I tell you, I bet those Colts fans that call in don't give their name and their addresses where they live.
Actually, we've had some Colts fans, believe it or not, come out of the woodworks here in New England.
Jeez.
How about that?
Brave hearts.
Mike, thank you very much.
See you guys.
All right, you got it. We'll talk to you soon. That's Mike Chappell, who covers the Colts for the Indianapolis Star newspaper. He began with covering the Colts when they moved from Baltimore in 1984. So he's been covering that team ever since they arrived in Indy, which would now be 23 years and counting. And so he's probably got his finger on the pulse of just about everything that's going on within that franchise in Indianapolis. And spent quite a bit of time talking to him last night when I was doing the ESPN radio show. And so it's good of him to come back and visit again today, albeit to an ostensibly different audience, a little bit more focused audience, national audience last night, worldwide audience today, baby, right here on Patriots.com radio. Web radio at Patriots.com is the email address if you want to send in your 2 cents worth. We're taking your score predictions. Come on, you've been waiting for this all week, and I know some of you have already done so. You jumped the gun, you couldn't wait for it, and you were bringing in the scores as early as Tuesday of this week. So what I'm going to ask you is that if you sent your score prediction in earlier this week, I want you to send it again because today we're really paying attention, okay? Early in the week, it's kind of like, okay, that's nice, that's fine, thank you for taking the time. But now we're paying attention. So send in the score prediction. Let's find out what you have to think. If you are a Colts fan and you're listening, whether you're in New England or you're in Indiana or wherever you may be, like in West Lynn, Oregon, Lawrence, and you've sent yours in. We've read it already. That's fine. Then I want you to send us your prediction and tell us why you think your team will win. Where will the difference be on Sunday? It's pretty easy to do, right? Webradio at Patriots.com. Ken in Florida says, Pats 36, Colts 27. That's pretty much all he says. But he's just going right there. Let's see who else we've got here. We're going to kind of weed through some of these. Let's see. Thanks for keeping us distant Pats fans up to speed with what's going on within the team. Let's see. Now for the Colts, 3 things I will be watching close. The Patriots' first drive will be very important. We've been great so far, and the Colts know that. Bill likes to set the tone on the first drive, but the Colts' very emotional defense can force that early punt. It could set a bad tone. 2, strip sacks on Brady. We've already had a few this year with defenses that don't have players near the caliber of Freeney and Mathis. Any turnover in this game could be killer. Well, there's no doubt about that. I can only recall 1 strip sack on Brady. I mean, I don't think we've only had like 5 turnovers, I think. No, 7 turnovers all year. 5 fumbles, I guess. Whoever steps it up to be the Colts' 4th receiver. Manning has gotten so much better with his checkdowns and patience. It's always frustrating to have Manning's main targets covered on a big third down play, and then he finds someone you have barely heard about for just enough yards to move the chains. I believe if the Patriots play their game and can stay out of turnovers, they should be able to come out with a victory from this very tough assignment. I can't wait for the game. Let's go with the Pats winning 35-28. And this prediction comes from Pat in Minnesota. Thank you, Pat. An excellent job by you. Matt from Oregon. Okay, guys, I'm a podcaster, so I haven't heard Wednesday's show yet, but I must say Tuesday's show was the worst I've heard yet. However, like a train wreck, I couldn't turn away. I think he's referring to the PFW, guys. He couldn't possibly be referring to me. Could he, Gary? The train wreck? Okay, I know. For some reason or another, I don't know if anybody can hear it. I have to put on the headphones here. So if you hear this, like, low little rumbling noise that's coming through, it's not your computer. It's not your hard drive about to crash. Right next door to where we have our radio studios here at Gillette Stadium, they're basically barreling their way through concrete. I don't know why they're doing it. Nobody can figure out why they're doing it. Yeah, that's what it sounds like when we take our headphones off. And it's right outside our door. And I think they're using the jackhammers to pile drive. Yeah. They're using jackhammers to pile drive through the concrete here at the stadium right outside our studio door here. With, of course, without any regard to thinking that, oh, they could be actually, somebody could be trying to work, or better yet, somebody could actually be trying to do radio, which is, you know, a tough thing to overcome. So, but, you know, hey, progress continues here at, you know, Patriot Place and Gillette Stadium. Never mind the people that have to work. So we apologize if you're hearing any of that noise. And Gary is trying to put on his headphones so he can not get a headache from all the pile driving. Anyway, Matt says, I know we've beaten this one to death, but let me share a little story with you. My senior year at BU, we went on the rugby team, went to New Zealand to play some teams over there and learn the sport from the Masters. Going into most of these games, we knew that it was entirely possible that we would be crushed by ridiculous point margins. However, we would never have expected the other teams to do anything other than keep playing as hard as they could until time expired, because no matter what the score, we would be doing our best to stop them. And even if we had lost 100-0, I would have gladly bought the other guys around later and congratulated them on a sound victory. That's what a real man does when he's getting whooped. He keeps fighting, and then he tries to learn how to do better in the future. He doesn't bitch and moan about being treated unfairly. Good point, Matt. Matt from Oregon. All right, this one comes from Dwayne, who says, I have an idea of what the X factor could be in Sunday's game, special teams. Whenever the Patriots play the Colts, the most common factor in each game is that New England special teams owns Indies, even if the game's lost against Indy. 2005 regular season game is the only game I can think of where this wasn't the case. In the AFC Championship, Ellis Hobbs ate up a chunk of yards in his returns, which made it a lot easier for the Pats to score in the second half of the AFC Championship. During the regular season, Indy special teams made Lawrence Maroney look like an all-star return man last year. In 2003, they managed to make Bethel Johnson look talented. Unless the Colts can manage either manage to stop the Patriots offense or significantly improve their defense in the kicking game, the Colts are going to struggle to keep up with the Patriots scoring. This gives the Patriots a significant edge in two phases of the game. Therefore, I am predicting a 42-24 victory over the Colts. I have not researched how well Indy has performed in the kicking game so far this year. Two words, Adam Vinatieri. I think maybe that's all you need to know. So thank you, Dwayne, for that one. Let's see if this email. Sean from Edmonton, Alberta, sent this one in. He says, I want to be as clear as possible on a secondary note. I just want to say how thrilled I will be when Brady sets the new single-season touchdown record. After the Colts' win in the Super Bowl last year, it was pretty tough to argue that Brady was a better quarterback than Manning. But when the dust settles from this season, I think that it'll be even harder to make the opposite argument. Okay, fair enough. He says, I want the Patriots to walk into the RCA Dome and show everybody who the better team is. It won't stop people from turning Tony Dungy and Bill Belichick into the NFL's version of God and Satan, but at least people will know who the better team is. Thank you, Sean. TG in New Jersey. Adai, Manning, Brady, Sanders, Clark, Harrison, we're all familiar with the big names, but who are the lesser-known players that could be the ones to make the critical play of the game? Who do you think on the other team could be the players that make the plays that determine the outcome of the game? Kyle Brady, Randall Gay, Dan Klecko, Ben Utek? This is drowning in the hype, TG and NJ. Well, actually, Mike Chappell kind of gave a little thought on that. He really likes the play of Tony Hugo, the new left tackle on the offensive line for the Colts, because he has to protect Manning's backside. So if the Patriots are able to get pressure, they're going to have to go through a guy like Hugo. So Hugo could indeed be a lesser-known player that might end up making a critical play of the game or potentially a critical blunder if the Patriots are able to beat him to get to Manning, put pressure and maybe even sack him or strip sack him or something along those lines. I mean, look at the week that Mike Vrabel had last week with three strip sacks on Jason Campbell of the Redskins. So I definitely think Hugo is going to be spot on, just as I think a guy like Matt Light is most likely going to be up against it trying to block Dwight Freeney. I think, you know, those two guys right there could be key guys that are sort of under the lights that could end up being the hero or the GOAT coming up. And as Mike just told us, an exclusive, I might add, to you people listening right here inside Patriots Playbook. He told us about Marvin Harrison. And if he doesn't practice tomorrow, you wouldn't expect him to see him out on the field on Sunday. That could be big. So if he does not go, and by the way, I personally think he will go, but if he does not, then a guy like Anthony Gonzalez could end up coming up huge here, because Gonzalez is the one that gets the playing time for Marvin Harrison, and Gonzalez would be matched up most likely against a guy like Asante Samuel. So a guy like Gonzalez can end up being a hero for the Colts, potentially a difference maker. Let's see what else we have here. Let's go with a lot of garbage today. Ray from Springfield. Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't here on Patriots Radio I heard you guys say that the Weiner Easterbrook's comments were bordering on slander and that someone from the Patriots charitable organization should send him a letter? Why the sudden about-face? I personally still feel that the idiot was snubbed by the Patriots organization when they hired the PFW staff, and now he finally has a chance to get even. And as far as the comparisons to the other high-powered teams of earlier years, do you think that is more the media raising the question of the Pats running up the score than the fans? I'm not sure where you're going with that. That was me that mentioned that, and I don't know where Tom Caselli got the fact that I wanted to pick a fight with a guy. No, I don't want to pick a fight with anybody. Why would I want to do that? That's stupid. Who told him that? Did you tell him that?
No, there was an email talking about you saying that Easterbrook should be sent a letter from the Charitable Foundation, and it's slander.
Yeah, I did say that. I absolutely did say that. I didn't say I wanted to pick a fight with a guy. But frankly, what I'm thinking is, and maybe if he did that column tongue-in-cheek, which I'm getting the impression now most people believe that he did, But if he did, what I'm saying is I thought the charitable organization should send him a letter to point out all of the good things the Patriots do, because he made it sound like guys like Brady and other guys on this football team do not do that in the community, which could not be further from the truth. Just want to make sure that he sees both sides of the story. That's all. He's entitled to his opinion. I told you that from day one, Ray, and anybody else who wants to listen. I told you that from day one. He's a columnist. That's what he does. His job is to, you know, tweak the heartstrings of football fans everywhere and get you to surf to that site and read his stuff, which apparently is now happening, which is fine. I just thought it was borderline irresponsible. That was my own personal opinion. Whether the Patriots follow up, my guess is they probably don't, because they probably won't pay it any attention at all, feeling like if they pay attention to it, it lends credibility to it. That's all. He says, as far as with the matchup with the Colts, we have the best chance this year of drubbing the Colts. We have a strong defense and finally an offense that compares to the Colts. This should be one of the games for the century. I predict Pats by 16. If the offense can put up the numbers they have the first 8 weeks, we're going to keep Manning off the field enough time to keep him from getting into his rhythm. See, I think, Ray, that's actually a huge key. I do believe that the Patriots will try to do some ball control on offense just to keep, number one, the ball away from the Colts, and number two, when the Colts do have the ball, to make them more one-dimensional. It's easier to defend a team when you know, or at least you have a good idea of what's coming. So both teams want to force the other into a passing situation. No doubt about that. That's exactly what you're looking at defensively. That's why I think that, quite frankly, I think that's why, you know, the defenses are hugely key here. Craig in South Carolina says, I think our ability to stop Indy will be largely dictated by how we perform defensively in the middle of the field. Yeah, we kind of talked about that, Craig. Good pickup. So much of their offensive success has been achieved on draws, slot, short throws to the backs and tight ends, and deep in cuts. Throw in our effort to get Manning's in, get in his grill and make him move. And if we play well in the middle of the field, we're going to keep the Colts to under 24 points. I know it isn't fair, but I hope Brady doesn't throw to Rivers at all. He got open and dropped two easy balls, looking clueless in the process. My fear is that a bobbled ball by Rivers could result in a costly turnover. This is one team we cannot afford to lose the turnover battle to. Former Colt Eric Dickerson has stated that the Patriots will get beat because they cannot run the ball. Idiot! He says Pats win 38-24. Well, I don't know what you want to say about Eric Dickerson. The reason why he doesn't have a job in broadcasting steadily anymore, huh? Let's see. We got other predictions here. Let's see. What else? Johnson said he was 100% after practice today. Watson's concussion systems were gone by Monday morning. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania. At what point is it considered running up the score? As I remember, the Colts spanked the Saints in the season opener 41-10 and 31-7, 29-7, respectively, the last 2 weeks. Why hasn't anyone accused the almighty Colts of any wrongdoing when they have their way with other teams' defenses? Have our beloved Patriots become the Antichrist? At which break point do teams need to stop scoring? And if we go beyond that, will we be flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct? The NFL crybabies need to grow up. Everyone crying would probably give up their firstborn to have an offense like the one Bill has built in New England. Thank you, Mike. PJ says, hey, Rook, what? Oh, you brought up an interesting topic yesterday. I almost forget that the Colts and Pats were in the same division not too long ago. Can you imagine what it would be like if that was the case today? Two games a year like this within the division on the line? Can you imagine a 15-1 team being a wild card team and having to play three playoff games with two of them on the road? Unbelievable. You know, that is kind of wild. And Mike just kind of mentioned that a little while ago. It's like, you know, the losers game could still end up 15-1, 14-2, and end up, you know, no better than the second seed, which would be great. But, I mean, if you're in the same division, PJ is absolutely right. If you're in the same division, could you be 15-1 and end up being a wild card and you're going to end up playing three games on the road? That truly would be unbelievable, unprecedented, and probably necessitating a rule change somewhere in the NFL. He says, here's my prediction for the game. Pats score at will. The Colts score almost at will. Pats 38, Colts 31. Thanks, PJ. Brian in Saugus, Mass. John, do you think that Lawrence Maroney is near 100%? I think that he looked really good on Sunday. And when do you think Sammy Morris will be back in the lineup? I think that they are a great 1-2 punch when they are both healthy. Yeah, I think Maroney's close. It's really, honestly, it's really kind of tough to tell with him. Simply because you just, you know, obviously they're very closed-mouthed about it, and you're not going to get any answers from the players themselves because they've been told not to talk about injuries. But, yeah, from the way he is, you know, able to break into the open field and make his cuts, I'd say, yeah, he looks like he's pretty close to 100%. As far as Morris is concerned, I guess the timetable on him is still maybe another week or two at best. So, you know, maybe the off week next week for the Patriots will benefit a guy like Sammy Morrison. Hopefully in a couple of weeks when the Patriots resume at Buffalo, it might be an opportunity to slowly work him back into the lineup. Who knows? He says, if Harrison doesn't play this weekend, who do you think Asante will be covering? Do you think Asante will be covering Wayne? I don't know why Harrison wouldn't play this weekend. And if he does play, who will cover Wayne? Wayne is the better wide receiver in my eyes. Ellis Hobbs, most likely, Brian. That's what I'm thinking. Ellis Hobbs probably draws that assignment.
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
It's that time again of week, kids. As we, on Thursdays, welcome in Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, and our good friend. Russell, I think that there's a big game on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, anytime Houston and Oakland get together, these things kind of happen. I'm sorry I bring that up only because from what I understand, And later I do a weekly spot in the Houston area.
So, do you really? Ah.
Yeah, yeah, so I shouldn't be joking, but, you know, the CBS affiliate there, the Texans are at Oakland, mm-hmm. which means since Houston's on the road, they'll be showing the Texans-Raiders game
nice.
Instead of the Colts-Patriots game.
Nice. Well, you know, hey.
These things happen.
Can't be perfect, right?
Yes.
You know, well, with all due respect, then to the Texans game coming up against the Raiders on Sunday, I think most fans around here, around these parts, and around much of the NFL, consider this game to be, shall we say, Super Bowl 41.5. Do you agree?
Well, you know, we've seen it before where we have these titanic tilts, and it doesn't necessarily A, live up to hype, and B, you know, the one team or maybe both teams don't wind up going as far as we think they do. But I will say this. I don't think that's going to be the case here. I mean, these two, we have an unprecedented matchup of unbeaten here. You know, the first time in the history of the league, which goes back 88 years, the two teams at least 7-0 meet each other. It's also become the premier rivalry of this decade. There's no question about it. It is what Dallas and San Francisco was in the mid '90s, mm-hmm. And that's also pointed out by the fact that this is the third year in a row that these teams meet the ninth week of the season. Very conveniently, you know,
it's
just
funny how the NFL kind of does that on purpose.
Well, I think so. I went back and looked, and '94, '95, '96, John, Dallas and San Francisco all met week 11 of the regular season.
Huh.
In consecutive years. So it's CBS's turn this year. Last year it was NBC's. The year before that was ABC Monday Night Football. These teams have met in the playoffs, you know, countless times. You know, it's now a 9-game rivalry, per se, of the Brady-Manning era. But it's also a rivalry that has taken an about-face.
Mm-hmm.
That was 6 straight wins for the Patriots, now 3 straight wins for the Colts. And I think that's what makes it intriguing, because now you have a matchup where you have a team scoring an unprecedented amount of points against a team that is defending Super Bowl champions. And I think we've mentioned it on these airways probably at least a month ago. It is role reversal from where these teams were basically 3 years ago. It is now the Patriots who are the hunters, and the teams that are loaded with bear with a high-scoring arsenal, and it is now the Colts are the defending Super Bowl champions, and now armed with a better defense than they've had in recent years.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, the whole good guy versus bad guy, good versus evil thing has kind of reversed itself as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of become a new theme along here now. You know, with the you know, the recent scores of the Patriots. I mean, there was a lot made of last week, and you know, the 52-7 game and Randall Godfrey's comments to Bill Belichick afterwards, you know, who knows what he really said, a lot being made of that. You know, the Patriots have scored 101 points in the last 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
The Colts have given up 102 this season in 7 games. So it really is, You know, these are numbers that would, like I said, be reversed. And we talked about it before. It is the Patriots putting up, like I said, unprecedented numbers. And it's the Colts making plays at the end of the game, sacking Vince Young or holding off the Texans. And just like the Patriots used to do when they were sacking Peyton Manning and pushing him out of field goal range on a Thursday night that Mike Vanderjag missed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a role reversal, but it's also understandable because in these last three meetings, the Indianapolis Colts, in the last three times they played the Patriots, John, and these are going to be numbers that we both know mm-hmm. by heart, and everybody in the world's going to know them by heart, have scored as many points in the last three meetings with the Pats than they did in the first six meetings, previous six meetings with the Pats. I shouldn't say first six.
Right.
It's 105.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 40, 27, and 38. Mm-hmm. And what made last year so revealing in that championship game was down, well, it was 21-3, then it became 21-6. But the Colts put up 32 points in the second half
of
the AFC title game. The New England Patriots, earlier that season, did not give up more than 27 points in any one game that season. And the Colts put 32 on them in the second half of the game alone. They also rolled up 311 yards of total offense in the second half alone. And what it made even more interesting is that team that scored the 27 points on them in the regular season was also the Indianapolis Colts.
Right.
So, 40, 27, 38, 105. What do? We go out and boost with and get Randy Moss. We get Wes Welker. We get Dante Stallworth. We fortify our wide receiving core. We get a little depth at running back with Sammy Morris, although he's hurt right now. And now I think the Patriots' goal all along has been to try to outscore the Indianapolis Colts.
Well, you know, I think also what they did is they knew that because they got exploited, as you suggested, by scoring that 32 in the second half in that championship game, they had to get a little bit, shall we say, quicker in the linebacking core, if not stronger, which is why they went out and found a guy like Adalis Thomas. Now, I don't know that he's going to make that much of a difference in the game, but I agree with you. I thought they think that the best way to combat what the Colts did to them is by doing unto others what others have already done to you.
Yes, I don't think there's any question about it. But what makes it interesting in this matchup is, and I've probably watched that AFC Championship game four or five times since it happened. Just being a football fan to watch think about what a fascinating game it was. Okay, you had three linemen score touchdowns in that game.
That's right. Saturday,
Logan Mankins recovered a fumble.
Yeah, Saturday recovered one.
Saturday recovered a fumble. Dan Klecko caught a touchdown pass.
Yeah.
You had the Colts go for a two-point conversion, which probably was a little bit of a surprise, but they pulled it off to tie the score. They finally even the score, and then the Patriots just keep on coming back with their special teams, which is still a little bit of a hole for the Indianapolis Colts. The will of Brady, the will of Manning. But the one person that really sticks out in my mind in that game, especially in the second half, and he's become a real focal point of the Colts passing attack this year even more, is Dallas Clark and what he was able to do again over the middle against that Patriot team. And I think that's the real key to the game. How far, how deep, how much can those Patriot linebackers cover Dallas Clark? Both teams have great, the Patriots do it with Welker, Stallworth, and Moss, and they also have the excellent tight end in Ben Watson. And Dallas Clark is almost like, even though he's a tight end, he's almost like a fourth wideout for the Indianapolis Colts, who do it with Harrison, who's a little banged up, Reggie Wayne, who's probably, of all the wide receivers in this game, probably playing the best overall wide receiver position. That's not to take anything away from Randy Moss. I'm talking about the complete position. The rookie, Anthony Gonzalez, and now Dallas Clark. I mean, it is a chess match of epic proportion.
Sure it is. And by the way, just so you know, we just had on Mike Chappell from the Indy Star, and he told us that Harrison did not practice again today. So he was told by Tony Dungy that if he doesn't practice tomorrow, he's probably not going to go on Sunday.
Yeah, that makes it even more intriguing as well. If you remember the game last year, even though he had very few catches, Marvin Harrison didn't have a great game in that game, the AFC Championship game. He had a phenomenal game in the regular season game, where he made that great one-handed to pull it in and tiptoe catch in the back, in the side of the end zone. But not having him changes a lot of different things for the Indianapolis Colts. But You know, we're sitting there talking about passing attacks and the quarterbacks and the wide receivers. We haven't even got to the running backs. You know, a pair of second-year guys were both taken in the first round last year in Lawrence Maroney and Joseph Addai. And Maroney's been a little banged up, and, you know, he's back and showed his mettle last week. But Joseph Addai has been, you know, I think everything they were looking for in a replacement for Edgerrin James. He's not Edgerrin James. He's a different kind of back than Edgerrin James, but he's a great combination of a guy who can run and catch a football.
Sure. Russell Baxter, NFL research coordinator for ESPN, visiting with us here on a Thursday, as he normally does, and we take a look at the Patriots game. We also look at some of the other games around the NFL. But I know you guys have spent a lot of your prep time on this game, even though you've got your own game to worry about on Monday night, which we'll touch on in a bit, which I think will be a good one and could even have implications for the winner of this game on Sunday on down the line this season. But looking at the Pats and the Colts, where is a lot of the focus amongst your guys, Ben? Where do they feel like this thing is going to really be decided?
Well, I have not had a chance to talk to Emmett Smith or Keyshawn Johnson yet. I have talked to Tom Jackson, and I know he talks about just the factor of just the overall more of a big picture type of thing. And one of the things I know he focused on was the offensive line and how these – it's almost a dead heat with these offensive lines, and it's something you rarely hear about. But you think about the enormous amount of time that Tom Brady has had to throw this year.
Yes,
those guys have done an absolutely outstanding job. And they really, I thought last year, that was an aspect of the New England Patriots that nobody talked about, was their offensive line. I think that's why they have become a better team than even the Super Bowl teams. And I know that's a stretch of teams that won 21 games and so on. But what makes them so formidable right now to me is the fact that they have a very, very underrated offensive line. But with Richard Seymour in there, I think they have the best defensive front, three-man front. And it's funny because you don't often think of three-man fronts when they start talking about, they have the best defensive line in the league. It's usually those words are usually relegated for four-man lines. But when you have Ty Warren and Vince Wilfork and Richard Seymour when healthy, they key everything that they do these days. You know, the Patriots teams that won those Super Bowls, I thought were probably more linebacker heavy and secondary heavy in terms of talent. Now you've got kind of an aging linebacking core. I think the secondary does not have the big playmakers that it used to have. I mean, Rodney Harrison is rounding back into form after the suspension, and Asante Samuel, don't get me wrong, one of the top-notch corners in the league, but you don't have the overall depth that you had back a few years ago. Now it's a team that's really predicated on the front line. And when those three guys are at the top of their game, I think they're almost unblockable. Now, of course, you're playing against a very, very good offensive line for the Colts as well. Tony Hugo, it's been a little banged up as well. But they're hoping, I don't know what Mike Chappell told you, if he's going to be available for this game.
At least at this stage, they expect him to be.
Yeah, and, you know, he has filled big shoes this year with Tarik Glenn. Now, Peyton Manning gets obviously a lot of credit for the fact that he does not get a lot of sack. He does not get sacked a lot because of not only his release, but the way he runs the offense and so on. But that line, I think, has become so much better at run blocking as well. I go back to last year's, I think a game that really kind of changed the personality, John, of these Indianapolis Colts was the playoff win at Baltimore last year. Remember, the Colts did not score a touchdown in that game. They kicked five field goals. Mm-hmm. And remember, that touchdown streak stretched into the AFC title game. Remember, they went the first half without scoring a touchdown, mm-hmm. and then they finally exploded in the second half. But I think people forget that the Indianapolis Colts had the ball. I think they were nursing a 12-6 lead with about 7 minutes left. And they controlled the ball for 7 minutes and changed and gave the Ravens the ball back, I think, with less than 30 seconds left in that divisional playoff game, kicked another field goal. And it was a kind of style of football that I think surprised some people because I think we've always looked at the Indianapolis Colts as strictly a finesse team. And I think they went out and showed a little mettle. They certainly showed that same mettle in the Super Bowl last year where they wore down the Chicago Bears. Throwing to the backs, running the football against Chicago's defense. That's what I think why people are so excited about this game. It's just not the fact that the Patriots are scoring points like crazy. It's not the fact that these teams have met in the playoffs regularly the last few years. It's hard to spot a really persistent weakness in either one of these teams. And that's why we have the matchup that we have, that, you know, it's not just that the Patriots are 8-0. The Colts are, if you go back to last year, 12-0, won their last 12 games. You know, the Patriots, be it counting the playoff game or just a regular season, have scored 34 or more points in 9 straight games going back to last year, or 9 straight, however you want to do the streak. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. Tom Brady has already eclipsed his career best numbers in 8 games by throwing 30 touchdown passes. The most he had ever thrown was 28. Right. I haven't even updated this number, but we did this last week. He's thrown 2 interceptions this year.
Mm-hmm.
Going into last week, John, 55 times this year a quarterback's thrown 2 interceptions in a game or more, and he's done it all year. So you are seeing just phenomenal football. He's on, I hate the word on pace, but you just look at where he was opposed to where Peyton Manning was after 8 games in 2004, after where Dan Marino was in 1984 when he threw for 5,084 yards. He is set to obliterate some of these numbers. Now, this game gets intriguing to me because is it possible that the Indianapolis Colts have the right mettle to slow down the New England Patriots? I think that's what the Indianapolis Colts need to do. I think if this turns out to be an all shootout, I think you can only favor the New England Patriots. I think if this becomes a slowdown game, I think you favor the Indianapolis Colts. And I think what makes it even more intriguing, while we're throwing history out, is
sure,
who knows better of slowing down a high-powered offense than Bill Belichick himself?
Right.
Who not only did it as a defensive coordinator with the New York Giants against the Buffalo Bills in Super Bowl 25, but he did it as a head coach against the St. Louis Rams in Super Bowl 36.
Correct. Absolutely correct. I think that adds to the intrigue because, you know that he's capable of doing that, and yet if he does do that, as you suggest, I kind of agree, I think that might end up favoring the Colts in the long run.
Yeah, we're all, and here's the funny thing. We know something is going to happen. Something is going to happen that we're not expecting in this game on Sunday. As much as we try to guess, as much as we try to forecast, as much as we try to figure this out, it's just like last year's championship game. When you're watching that game, could you ever imagine that the New England Patriots were going to be up 21-3?
No.
And let the game get away?
No,
could
never.
You ever imagine you'd see two offensive linemen and a defensive tackle score touchdowns?
Nope.
In the game? You ever imagine that it would be the Colts who would move down the field in the final two minutes, 3 minutes, and change? And yet, Tom Brady throws the interception to Marlon Jackson late. There was so much about that game that I think is still fresh in people's minds that they're carrying over into this year's game. Because, to me, last year's championship game was one of the best football games, I think, in the last 10 years. Because of everything it had in it, mm-hmm. and so on. And I think you now set the stage with, you know, not only this unprecedented matchup between the two teams, but, you know, you've got a quarterback with 3 rings who is putting up, you know, mind-bending numbers against a quarterback who has put up all the numbers in the past and yet is now playing almost a different style of football.
Right.
I don't want to say the word unselfish and so on, but Peyton Manning is not putting up the numbers that he has put up in the past, and yet the Indianapolis Colts are still winning very consistently.
All right, Russell, then I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your inclination towards Sunday's game and who you think could actually end up being on top after all is said and done?
Well, my inclination is to go with the team I picked to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year, and that was the Indianapolis Colts. Now, I won't tell you who I had them beating in the Super Bowl, Philadelphia Eagles, because they're also kind of a sluggish start. But I'm always a great believer, and once the pendulum swings for a little bit, it swings for a little while. And the fact that the Colts have had their number recently leans me to believe. Now, would I be surprised if we're going to see these two teams meet again? Absolutely not. But I think I'm leaning toward the Colts in here, and I think I'm leaning probably toward like a 26-21 game with a bunch of Adam Vinatieri field goals and – the Colts doing just enough to hold them off. I mean, I think the Colts need to run the football. I think they'll be able to run the football. I don't think they'll truly be able to slow down what the Patriots are doing. But if you're putting me on the spot, I'm going to go 26-21 Colts.
So you think that
doesn't it feel like you're picking the Super Bowl?
Yeah, just a little bit. It really does. So yeah. you kind of feel like then defense might end up being a factor in this thing after all.
Well, I think defense has to be a factor. I think it's going to have to take play. You got to talk about plays and so on. I think what's interesting, here's a big key. In the six times that here's I think, which is a startling number. In the six previous meetings before this winning streak, the Indianapolis Colts lost those six meetings to Tom Brady and the Patriots, six in a row. Mm-hmm. They scored 105 points, John. They turned over the ball 19 times in those six games.
Okay.
In the last three games, where they've scored the exact same amount of points, they committed a total of four turnovers.
Right.
That's a big swing. That's a big turnaround. It's not like the Patriots have played necessarily bad in all those games. Remember, they've scored 21 points, 20 points, 34 points. It's not like their point total has gone down dramatically. But you also remember in a lot of those games, you saw mistakes by the Colts translate into instant points by the New England Patriots. If you go back to the first time that Tom Brady started an NFL game, which was a rout of the Indianapolis Colts up in Foxborough, I think it was both Ty Law and Otis Smith returned interceptions for touchdowns. How many big plays has the New England defense in the past made against the Indianapolis Colts? We talk about the Willie McGinnis sack. We talk about the year that Peyton Manning threw 49 touchdown passes, then lit up the Denver Broncos in the playoffs, and then they go up to snowy Foxborough and they get a field goal mm-hmm. in the divisional playoffs, the 20-3 loss. So New England's defense has not only stifled Peyton Manning at times, it's taken some of their mistakes and translated into instant points. But I think this will be different a little time around, and I think right now it's the Indianapolis Colts who are, well, obviously they're the champs, but New England Patriots are in a little bit of the chase mode right now.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the perception is that they are the best team in the league right now, I'm always big, great believer in champions until the throne. Now, this is not the Super Bowl. This is not the AFC Championship game. It's not a playoff game. But I'm going to stick with my original premise, which was Colts win the Super Bowl. So I think the Colts need to win this game if they are going to go on and win the Super Bowl.
Okay. Obviously, there are other games to be played this week. I think most of them pale in comparison to the magnitude of this one. But nevertheless, since we do make a habit of talking about them, I wanted to just touch briefly on the fact that within the division, Miami has the week off this week, which is probably a good thing for them. Buffalo, which is 3-4, they're at home against Cincinnati, which is 2-5. The Bills at their halfway point have a chance to pull even here. Now, I'm not going to put Buffalo and the word playoff in the same, breath just yet, but I think this is a step in the right direction for them.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, you think of all the injuries that this team has gone through, especially on their defense, and also the free agent departures they lost in the offseason with the London Fletchers and the Nate Clements, and of course their second-round pick, Paul Posluszny, who got hurt after a pretty promising start and so on. They've really, really been banged up on defense. They're playing on with a lot of heart. They've lost a couple of heartbreakers this year, but they came back last week, won on the road. It'll be J.P. Lossman again. For everything that the Buffalo Bills are doing, it's everything that the Cincinnati Bengals are not doing. You gotta like Buffalo here because I just think they're playing on a lot of emotion and a lot of heart. And I'm not sure what's going on in Cincinnati right now. They look like a disheveled team with an unhappy wide receiver and a defense that just never seems to get any better, John.
Yeah, definitely not any better. And as far as Washington playing at the New York Jets, could we just hope that maybe the ground opens up and swallows them both?
Well, I think the ground opened up for the Redskins last week.
Sure did.
So it's a matter of them digging themselves out and so on. Probably the most interesting thing in this game is to see which sideline Pete Kendall will run to. I don't feel like it'll be to the Jets. He couldn't wait to get out of there for whatever reasons and so on. Now he's with the Redskins. And, Redskins were pretty humbled last week, but the New York Jets, they're going to start Kellen Clemens this week. They've already, they were a 10-6 team last year, and they've already lost more games than they did all of last year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot made of Pennington Clemens, but a lot more should be made of a very, very disappointing defensive unit that looked like it was an up-and-comer the second half of last year and is very, been a very, very big disappointment this year, and now will be a big disappointment minus Jonathan Vilma for the rest of the season.
That's correct. Pretty intriguing game, little interconference matchup between Green Bay and Kansas City, with this one being at Kansas City. The Chiefs may be a bit of a surprise, but in the overall scheme of things, they're up there at the top of the AFC West right now, and Green Bay's been one of the big surprises of the NFC. Is this another shot for the Packers to prove their overall worth here?
Well, listen, you know, the Packers are a 10-1 team the last 11 games going back to last year. Pretty impressive, considering they started out 4-8 and looked like they were headed nowhere. I thought that was one of the five best plays of the year last week on Monday night, the touchdown pass to Greg Jennings. Mm-hmm. Their defense is really up and coming. They got really good linebackers, but they have even better defensive linemen than Cullen Jenkins and Aaron Campman. But you want to talk about a coaching job. The Kansas City Chiefs were 0-2. This year, lifeless against the Texans, lifeless against the Bears, looked like they were headed nowhere, and now 4 wins in 5 games and tied for the AFC West lead. And keep in mind, you know, I know the Raiders are struggling per usual the last few years. They've already won at San Diego and at Oakland.
Correct.
So with 2 road divisional wins under their belt, great start by Herman Edwards and his team. This is a very intriguing matchup. Green Bay's coming off a short week, Monday night, going on the road. Kansas City's coming off a bye. Sometimes I think it works against you, though. I'm kind of leaning toward the Packers. They haven't beaten the Chiefs in a long, long time. Not as far back as the Super Bowl and so on, but they haven't beaten them in a long time. And, you know, that number got thrown out last week about Tom Brady and Peyton Manning being the first two quarterbacks to beat 31 teams. Well, Brett Favre beats Kansas City. He'll join them as
the club,
third
right.
quarterback. To beat 31 different teams, and I think I'd lean a little toward the Packers here.
Okay. Two of the games really actually don't look too bad, one of them being Dallas at Philadelphia on Sunday night. And you know, the Cowboys at 6-1 still look to be at or near the top of the NFC. The Eagles, I think, are in a must-win situation if they have any hope of not only catching Dallas but maybe thinking playoffs themselves.
I don't think there's any question about it. You know, Dallas has lost one game this year, and that was to New England, an interconference game. You know, Dallas really hasn't gotten to the meat of their divisional schedule yet. They haven't played the Eagles at all. They haven't played the Redskins at all. They beat the Giants on opening night and so on. Philly, I agree with you, John. This is desperate times for them. They've already lost to the Giants this year. They lost to the Redskins at home on Monday night back in week 2. They can't afford another divisional loss. You know, everybody in their division except them is above 500. So they've dug themselves quite a big hole. I know last year they started strong, mid-season slump, and then finished strong. But they don't look like they're the same team to put in that position. They've scored most of their touchdowns. I think their offense has scored 13 touchdowns this year. 8 of them came in the win over the Lions, and 5 have come in the other 6 games this year. So they've really struggled. I just think Dallas has too many ways to score on Philadelphia. They're expected to get Brian Dawkins back this week, the Eagles are, but I don't think it'll make that much of a difference. I know Philly's kind of had Dallas's number in recent years, swept them last year, but these are two totally different teams from a year ago.
Right. Your game on Monday night, the ESPN Monday night game, Baltimore at Pittsburgh. You know, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I would have thought this would have been an outstanding matchup, and certainly right up there maybe with if the Patriots and Colts are 1, then this would be 1A. I'm not so sure that Baltimore stays with Pittsburgh in this one.
Well, what will be intriguing here is how Pittsburgh plays it. You saw it again last week. The Steelers, if you look at their stat sheet, they've got really good rushing numbers. But their rushing numbers are really predicated by now the pass setting up the run. And Ben Roethlisberger, he has regained what I call escapability. He didn't have it last year due to a lot of different things, concussion, appendectomy, motorcycle accident, take all your pick and so on. But he really keys what they do offensively. Willie Parker's having a great year statistically, but the Steelers play a different style of football than they did in years past. It's not like they have their 5 guys and they just plow through you and play power football and so on. They have a tendency maybe to do that later in games, but early in games it's really the passing game that sets up the running game. Now I will say this, the Steelers last year were swept by the Ravens for the first time ever. They were swept by the combined score of 58-7.
Wow.
And in both games, the Baltimore Ravens really physically beat up Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers. And last year, you saw that Steeler team that was still, you know, even more so than they're doing now, really throwing to set up the run. They got away from what has made them a fine franchise and their identity in recent years. Now, this year, like I said, they're still doing it. They have a more capable quarterback who's, you know, of sound mind and sound body, which was not the case last year. I think the difference here is how Pittsburgh's defenses play. They are a much more aggressive unit than they have been, that they certainly were last year. And I think they will come out and really trying to attack Baltimore's offense, which has really, really struggled.
Right.
Little side note here, Pittsburgh, going back to 92, which was Bill Cowher's first year, obviously he's not there anymore, have won 11 straight Monday night games at home.
Good grief.
They've always seemed to shine on Monday night at home. So that's a streak that kind of bears watching.
You think it's something that continues this week?
Yeah, I think it does. I think the fact that this team was kind of embarrassed by that. You remember, you know, Pittsburgh started 2-6 last year.
Right.
Finished 6-2. Both of their losses were to the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
I think that will play in the minds of the veterans that were there. And I don't think they need to be physically, but they lost at home last year to the Ravens in Week 16, 31-7. They were physically pushed around by Baltimore, and you just don't you rarely see that with a Pittsburgh Steelers team. But I think they'll try to make amends and should make amends this Monday night.
Russell, I think that most fans are anticipating this weekend like few others during the course of the season, and when talking about the NFL.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. I think it's the biggest regular season game. I was kidding with someone today since the Dallas-New England game. But it's actually a lot bigger than that. It's fun now because it really has become the preeminent rivalry in this league, much like Dallas and San Francisco was. You remember 10 years ago we looked forward to that and knew more than likely we're going to see them play twice a year.
Right.
That's kind of what we've seen with the Patriots and the Colts now. And, you know, you go back 25, 30 years and stuff like that, who ever thought the Colts and the Patriots –
nobody.
Been.
No, nobody.
And I remember, do you remember this? I know you do, John. 1981, they were both 2-14.
Sure. Yeah.
2-14. The Colts that year beat the Patriots on opening day, lost 14 games in a row, and then beat the Patriots the last
Again.
Game of the
yeah.
season.
Yeah, the funny thing about it is I had an emailer bring up the point, you know, can you imagine these two teams were still in the same division, playing each other twice a year? I mean,
and we had that for a little while. We had that for the first 2 years of the rivalry,
right.
Or the current, I'm going to call it the current rivalry, the mm-hmm. nine-game rivalry
right.
in 2001. And that was the course of the Patriots' first Super Bowl winning year.
Mm-hmm.
Again, nice history with Brady made his first start against the Colts. I always remember the game a couple weeks later at the RCA Dome, which I always refer to as the David Patton game, in which David Patton caught two touchdown passes, ran for a touchdown, and threw a touchdown pass, and when they beat the Colts in 2001 at the RCA Dome.
That's right. Yeah, actually. That's right. You know, see, I've got to sometimes, you know, knock the cobwebs out of my brain here, remember all this good stuff. That's why I rely on you sometimes, you know.
Well, then, but the Gary will catch me every once in a while.
Gary's always good at that.
I was at that game, Russell.
I'm sure you were.
See, there you go.
It was the David Patton game, wasn't it, Gary?
I believe so.
Absolutely. I think that made them 3-3 over the season.
Yeah.
Yep, and then they all of a sudden they were, what, 5-5 after they lost to the Rams on the Sunday? Like, oh, okay, they're a nice story. And then they won their last nine games in the Super Bowl.
Right.
And off and running.
Off and running.
Although I refer to the David Patton game as the one where he was knocked unconscious on the sideline and yet touching the ball. So
touching the ball,
they retained
right.
possession.
Yeah. One of those first of many calls that seemed to go the Patriots' way.
Yep, and David Patton, by the way, having a nice little run in New Orleans the last two or three weeks, by the way.
Yeah, that's true.
As the Saints look like, that's, by the way, another intriguing game this week, Jacksonville at New Orleans. Two teams look like they're definitely headed in the right direction, and the Saints after a sluggish start have caught fire, so really, really intriguing game down the Superdome this week.
Russell, as always, it is appreciated. We'll talk to you next week, and have
Okey-doke. Is next week our game show week?
Actually, are we doing it next week? Yeah, we're going to try to
No, the following week.
Following week, we're going to do game show stuff.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, we actually have two kind of off weeks, leading up to the off week and then coming off of the off week.
Aha.
See? So.
All right. So that'll be double Jeopardy.
We'll play around. Yeah, exactly. Play around with that. We'll see if we can't work you in some form or fashion.
I told you, Hugh Nance and concentration. I'm ready.
Maybe you could be our Gene Rayburn.
Oh, I like Gene Rayburn. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, he's.
How about Bill Cullen?
Bill Cullen, yeah, vastly underrated, I think, is
very underrated, show. Very smart, very funny.
I would agree with that.
We just lost 93% of the audience.
No. When we put a little match game music in there, it always brings them back.
There
we're all thrilled, and we're terribly excited.
Russell, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
John and Gary, enjoy it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree with that. Thank you. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, as he joins us each and every Thursday inside the playbook. All right, we're in good shape today, man. We're in good shape today. Do we want to squeeze in a timeout so we can figure out what the heck we're going to do next? That would always be good. Okay. Oh, Bill after the break? How about that? Bill Belichick coming up in just a couple of months right here inside the playbook.
Playoff action is back in Foxborough. Once again, your New England Revolution have advanced to the MLS playoffs and are looking for a return trip to MLS Cup.
Drives it for him, and the goal! 1-0 Revs! What a huge tally for New England!
Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m., Taylor Twellman, Pat Noonan, Matt Reese, and the rest of the Revs take to the field in Foxborough, and they want you there to cheer them on to victory.
Takes a touch, and buries it! 1-0 Revs! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Individual tickets start at just $18, and significant discounts are available for groups of 20 or more. Bring your family or group and don't miss a minute of this exciting playoff match at Gillette Stadium. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS. That's 1-877-GET-REVS to get your playoff ticks.
Get your ticks
and get the Revolution.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Yeah, let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo! And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Welcome back inside the playbook as we roll along here inside hour number two as the Pats and Colts get ready for their matchup on Sunday at the RCA Dome in Indianapolis. John Rook with you, and we'll work in some emails here. We're going to hear a little bit from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today here at Gillette Stadium. We'll also get inside the Patriots locker room, let you hear from a couple of the players who have their comments on preparing for the Colts as well. We'll wrap up the program today by letting you listen into the conference call with Colts head coach Tony Dungy, which I also think is rather poignant this week in light of the fact that we've had a lot of off-the-field stuff go on with the Patriots this year as well, and he directs some comments toward that end. So we'll let you make up your own minds. In the meantime, emails continue. Andy in Vermont says, you know, I have to agree. Why do these pro football players who get paid millions of dollars to play defense expect teams that are whooping their butts to just lay down and stop whopping them? It's like high school or elementary school. That is bull bleep. I really am sick of the whining. How come when Peyton was breaking the touchdown record, he wasn't running up the score? Or the Rams in 99? I personally love every minute of it. Score, score, and score some more. And the defense has been pretty good at stopping teams from scoring, except two games, really. And this Patriots team must be taking this game pretty seriously, considering the AFC conference loss can't be too far removed from their minds. I expect another great game from Brady to continue his run at history. Thank you, Andy. Brian in Saugus sends a note back. He says, Pats will win 38-24. It'll be a great game, but the Pats will pull away in the fourth quarter. This one comes from Pete, the old man of the mountains in New Hampshire. And he goes, enough of the running up the score stuff. If I wasn't so old, I'd come down and kick your nanny butts. One of the things I was taught in boot camp by our TI, when you fight to see who gets stomped, period. What could be more demeaning to a pro than to have another team say through their actions, we felt sorry for you, so we let up? If you want to see how this story should have been covered, check out two recent articles by Sally Jenkins of the Washington Post. There is a sweet irony in that it takes a woman to notice this stuff. Bill is Darth Vader. Tom is a baby-faced assassin. Get over it. I already decided to stop following football when the Belichick-Brady era ends. It will never again be this good. I may, however, continue to watch Christina Acra. And then he has some things here about the podcast don't work. So you need to direct that stuff to Mr. Kirsch. He's the one that takes care of that stuff. Thank you. Ray says, Pats win by 18, 38-20. Six Gostkowski field goals, and Vinatieri misses one. This one comes from Nick, who sends a couple of notes, I think, to Tom Casale. But anyway, he says, I think that Bill Belichick is a genius, and maybe a little petty, but a genius nevertheless. I think we can all agree with that. So he sees that he has a team that no one will stop, and how do you keep that team motivated? He makes them the bad guys. Now, they aren't the team no one talks about, but they are the classless team. So gets the team focused on winning in the face of everyone hoping they lose. It's the same us-against-the-world tactic he's used before, seen from a different angle. I also think that Bill is getting them used to not letting up so teams can't come back like the Colts did in the AFC Championship game. I can't believe how many of the ESPN experts are lining up with the Colts. I'm not really that worried. Every team the Colts have played is either a fraudulent team or were dealing with injuries when the game was played. Washington, San Diego, and Dallas are all better wins than anything the Colts have done so far. Denver is the best win they have. Nick in San Diego says New England wins 48-31. 48-31. All right, let's let you then listen into a little bit of Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today here at Gillette Stadium. We'll follow that up with a little play inside the Patriots locker room and Tony Dungy still to come inside the playbook. But here is Pats head coach Bill Belichick from just a short while ago.
Who was here? All right, working on a lot of big stories today. Got a lot to write about this week. Or talk about, I guess. Don't want to exclude the video media back there. No? Yeah, I think we are. Yeah. Yeah, it's blowing pretty good out there. I don't think we'll get that much in the dome.
Is that something you would have done anyway, or is it specific to
going to play? You know, I think we always like to get outside, just fresh air. Grass, but you know, as it affects the execution of the game, then might as well try to get as close to game conditions as we can. So, you look nice today, Mike. Wow. Really trying to put the pressure on me, huh? Maybe I'll do that one of these days, come in here in a suit for you.
Out of Richard Seymour after playing limited slot.
You know, hopefully it'll increase a little bit each week. You know, we try to simulate game conditions in practice. It's, of course, not the same as a game, but it's, you know, build up the stamina and the reps and the reactions and all those things. And, you know, so he's further ahead this week than he was last week. I would expect that he'd be further ahead next week than this week, you know, that type of thing. You know, and that'll probably progress for a while. You know, he missed all the training camp in the first 6 weeks of the regular season. So that's a lot of time. You know, it's a lot of practices, and it's whatever, 10 games, potential games. So, but I would think it would increase a little bit each week.
How close is he to where you'd like him to see facing this competition?
Well, it doesn't make any difference. It's you know, it's the schedule, it's the progression that we're on. And like I said, I think each day is a little bit better. Each week should be a little bit better. You know, we'll just move forward on a day-by-day basis. Right now, it's, you know, the only day I'm worried about is today. I'll worry about tomorrow.
Getting Watson back out to practice, is that a good sign?
It's good to everybody we have out there. It's good to have as many as we can have. So it's always good to see him come back.
So obviously, a team always gets nicked up during the course of the season, but you're at 8 games. How would you say right now this team is holding up as compared to maybe some of the past teams you've had? Are they staying in pretty good shape for you?
Well, I think everybody's working hard. Yeah, I mean, you know, some guys are limited, and some guys aren't. You know, this is probably this is probably the deepest we've gone into a season with a bye, isn't it? Though we usually have them, you know, we usually have them before this. So, you know, we've been going here for what this will be 13 straight games, you know, to some degree. 9 anyway, you know, and then plus the preseason ones, but, you know, these guys are working those days, those weeks, so it's probably the longest we've gone on that, but it's not something really that you, I'm not saying you don't worry about it, because you have to manage your roster and manage your team, but you really can't do anything about it other than, you know, whatever your options are, so that's what we'll do, you know, the guys that are out or are out. The guys that are close, we'll evaluate them, you know, at game time. And the guys that are going to be there but need to manage a little bit, then we'll manage them. That's really about all we can do.
Bill, yep. Your quest for perfection, what area or areas of concern do you have that may be exposed by Colts?
Well, what do I worry about them game planning us with? I don't think we want to talk about that.
Ideally, what? In your quest for perfection, what do you want to see better?
Look, it's really, you know, every game is different. So it doesn't really make any difference what happened last week. We're going up against a team this week that has its own style of play and a very good performance level. You know, they have their special, you know, players that are hard to game plan for. They have their schemes. They have their way of doing things, and they're very successful doing it. So that's really what we have to get ready for. It doesn't really make any difference whether we did something well the last 2 or 3 weeks or not. Trying to do it well against this team and the way they play will be, it's a whole new challenge.
Bill Belichick from earlier today here at Gillette Stadium, and speaking directly to some of the injury issues and how he feels about the team being in shape. You know, frankly, I think the Patriots have been fortunate to this point in time. I mean, he is right in the fact that normally the bye week is a little earlier than it is coming this year at week 9. I think it's great that if you can work it out somewhere around the midway point of the season, I think it, you know, certainly helps you more than it hurts you. But, you know, under previous years, this team would definitely be considered a, you know, team of walking wounded. I don't think that's quite the case. If anything, this team is getting healthier because you've welcomed back Richard Seymour, you know, and you look to be welcoming back Benjamin Watson. So, I mean, bye weeks always come at a good time. There's never a bad time for a bye week, unless, of course, maybe it's the first week of the year or very early. That might not be a great time to have it. But I do think that having relative good health, knock on Formica, I think having relative good health has definitely been a factor for the Patriots in terms of their overall performance thus far. I don't think anybody could have a problem with how healthy they've been. Compared to other years, this has been a fortunate season. And maybe because of, you know, other years, law of averages is finally paying off just a little bit, you know, where that's concerned. Jason in Boston sends this note. I must say I've never heard of this guy, Greg Easterbrook, before his two articles slamming the Pats and their dominating successes. Is this his only shtick? Did anyone care what this guy said before he went so far out on the limb? When we win this weekend, will he be able to move on, or will he desperately cling to the only noteworthy thing he's written? Time for him to get some new material. I guess, Jason, we'll find out after all is said and done. That will be the proof in the pudding. He says, Pats 38, Colts 24. Seems to be about the general consensus in terms of the final score. Patriots in the upper 30s to 40s, Colts in the mid to high 20s, generally speaking. All right, let's get inside the Patriots locker room for you. And this week we hear from Kevin Faulk, we hear from Mike Vrabel, and we hear from Adalys Thomas as the Patriots get set for the Indianapolis Colts.
Well, everyone is kind of billing this as a Super Bowl 1.5, the game of the century, whatever you call it. How are you guys looking at it?
Well, I mean, I think we're looking at it pretty realistically that, it's going to be a heck of a matchup, and it's a big game. We're going to have to put a lot into it this week to try to get the upper leg up in the preparation and then, go over there and play in a place that, we haven't won in a little bit and play well.
How much do you guys think about what happened last year there in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, I think we certainly are aware of it. I mean, it's not going to have any bearing on this week's game. I think it's when you look back at the offseason, certainly it was disappointing to finish our season that way, but moving forward, we've all worked out in the off season, and we've all started a training camp, and we've all began this season with that really not in our minds. I mean, just wanting to get better and be a better football team. So certainly, to start the off season, it was tough to deal with, but I think we've all moved past and moved on to that, and they're trying to do the same things they did last year, and we're trying to get where they are.
How have you guys gotten better in your mind since that game?
Well, I mean, I think that, at least I try to speak defensively. I think we're trying to play, a better team defense where we're trying to get everybody to the football. And, a lot of the guys we have back, we're out there. We welcome Rodney back. But you just have to continue to do the things that you're successful at. We can't try to play like somebody else and try to look and see what they did or, look and see how other teams play. We have to go out there and we have to, play the defense we know with the guys we have.
Looking back, just to last, we're talking about team defense, 3 sacks. How much of that was a result of other people doing their jobs in defense? And do you always try to kind of strip sack when you get a chance?
Well, I mean, I think any time that somebody makes a play, more times than not, other guys are involved. So certainly, anytime you get a sack, unless you're pretty much free to the quarterback, there has to be some sort of coverage element. I think on the one. On the third one, I think Junior and I were trying to work a little game, and obviously he came in there and drew a lot of the attention, and I was able to come by there. And then also, with the strip sacks, it just gives you another opportunity to get the ball. Really, that's probably the worst ball security guy on the field is the quarterback when he's looking to try to make a play, and if you have some awareness, you can usually get it out.
How do you contain Dallas Clark?
Well, I mean, I think he's a good tight end. He can run like most receivers. And, they split him out and they bring him in. Certainly look for him to get the ball. I would say that he's one of Peyton's go-to guys, and he's tough to cover because he runs well. He runs good routes. So how do we do that? I don't know. I mean, he's had good success against us.
You guys used 3 safeties to contain Witt against Dallas. Will you do that again, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the times we play – personnel-wise, whether it's 3 safeties, whether it's 5 linebackers, I mean, safeties are cover guys, safeties rush, outside linebackers rush, cover. So, we're going to have a lot of different combinations out on the field, as we do every week. I mean, if you look and you say, well, we got 3 safeties, but, guys may be playing different positions. We've got outside linebackers playing rush guys. So, we're going to get guys. We'll have 11 of them out there.
How has Joseph Addai improved from the last time you saw him in the AFC Championship?
Well, I mean, I thought he was pretty good last year, so obviously he's had a really good season so far this year. His ability to read his linemen and their blocks and his cutting or his jump cutting, ability in the hole is pretty impressive. So, it's going to be important for us to try to, stay in there with them and not, when you start dancing, I mean, those guys can dance and cut a lot better than we can. So He's certainly a good runner inside. I think that's the thing. You see holes that aren't there or creases, and he kind of waits them out and cuts and kind of dips in there, and next thing you know, it's 6 yards.
How important to you is the potential playoff home field seeding?
Well, I think right now, John, I think it's real early to start to talk about that. I mean, I think we need to continue to play our schedule as it presents itself, to continue to build by going out there, practice, and playing well. And really, you know, week 14, then you start to look and say, well, you know, here's where we're at. At least, you know, I remember back in Pittsburgh when we did have home field advantage wrapped up 1 year. I remember Bill. You know, kind of resting the starters. You know, this is Bill Cowher I'm talking about now. So, you know, we've really never gotten into that here as far as, you know, looking down the road and seeing what's going on. So I just remember, you know, when we had home field wrapped up in Pittsburgh, Coach Cowher resting some starters.
Are you surprised sometimes when you yourself are on offense that teams don't pay more attention to you because usually, you know, you come in, especially this last game, you were wide open?
I mean, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. I mean, when they do, I don't get the ball, and then when they don't cover me, I get the ball. So, you know, you can only stop so much down there. I mean, it's either, you know, drop everybody off and play the pass and let us walk it in. You know, so I'm not running out there every time thinking I'm going to score.
So they're better off covering Randy Moss than you?
I would always cover Randy before me. Thanks, guys.
And then at the same time, I look at it, both teams know each other, and it's pretty much the game is going to be played on Sunday, not on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. Exactly, and that's just what I said. You know, it's like a soap opera. You know, everybody's going to have their different questions. Everybody's going to have their different stories about the game. But at the same time, both teams know this game is played on Sundays, and that's where it's going to be determined.
That's what happens when you have 200 feet of teams going at each other.
If you want to call it that, it's just two good teams, you know, well-coached teams that's playing the football game.
How would you compare Brady to Manning?
I just got this question asked to me. Two phenomenal quarterbacks, you know, putting their teams in phenomenal position to win games.
What impresses you most about the Colts?
Just the consistency they have on their team.
Kevin, how tough is Sanders when he's out there?
Oh, he is a big difference. You can tell, you know, I think last year against us, the first game play, he had 26 tackles. So that's just, hands down, that's unbelievable.
Do you have more of a chip on your shoulder for this team simply because of the way they knocked you guys out of the playoffs last year?
I wouldn't see a chip on your shoulder. You have it in the back of your mind, but at the same time, that's not going to help you win the game.
Are you taking home field at all? Or?
It's too early for that, man. You know, we both can lose two in a row in the next 2 weeks after we play each other, and we don't know that. That's just too far down the line to think about.
But do you remember what it was like walking off that field in Indy last year?
Of course you did, but at the same time, that's not going to help you win. What's going to help you win is me blocking the linebacker if he blitzes, or me running the ball and getting the first down when it's 4th-and-1. That's what's going to win the game for us.
Do you think this team is better equipped to win this game than that team was?
I know that by the end of this week, we're going to be in a better situation to win the game than we are right now when I'm speaking to you.
Kevin, how special is what you guys have done this year so far?
To us, honestly, it really means nothing to us. You know, we're just taking each game one game at a time. And our big goal is to, you know, to go out there and make it to the playoffs and win a championship. That's our goal. Winning 8 games is not a goal for us.
Does the controversy that you guys have faced this year affected you at all, positively, negatively?
I really don't remember what controversy you're talking about.
What about?
Am I serious?
Yeah, I mean, the Spygate, now people are claiming you guys are running up the score. People, not everybody, but some.
That's just it, people. It's not people in this locker room. We know what we're doing as a football team, and that's just it. We can't control what everybody else thinks about us or believes or what we are. If I'm not mistaken, I think they had a good versus evil scenario, and that's kind of crazy if you ask me.
Well, you're coming across as, you know, sort of a bully.
Who, me?
Yeah, this team, you guys are bullies picking on teams.
You've been in this locker room a whole bunch, and you know better than that. Yeah. It's just a team doing their job, you know, following the coach's instructions and doing their job and wanting to win games. That's all it is.
You talk about the coach's instructions. What kind of tone did Bill set today when he met with the team?
Well, pretty much we have to be in.
Well, how big is this?
How big? How big? It's just as big as the rest of them because it's the next game. It's not big because it's the Colts. It's, you know, it's no more important than the other games that we've played. It just happened that it's the Colts. And you guys are all hyped over this.
How you going to crush these guys?
Next question. He must think I'm a rookie or somebody.
Well, it's a little extra special because you got two undefeated teams going at it now.
It still doesn't change anything. That, you know, it's still the next opponent. You know, it's a good football team, the champs, you know, and so they're undefeated and going to their place, a hostile environment. And so it's a 60-minute game. It's going to be a tough game.
What kind of special problems does Indianapolis present with their offense?
You name it. You know, they run the ball well. They throw the ball well. Have great receivers. Peyton's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And so, you know, again, we have our task cut out with us on all sides of the ball, special teams, defense, as well as offense.
Halfway through this season, has this team established its identity in some ways?
What's that?
Has this team established its identity?
Nice build that. I don't know nothing about no identity. I don't deal with that. You know, we just go out and try to play and win games, and that's all we try to do.
As you watch Dallas spot, he always seems to find a way to get open. Why is that?
Because nobody's covering him. I mean, they're great. He's always been a good quarter tight end, and Peyton always throws the ball away from the defender, and he's always done a good job. Clark is kind of like a receiver out in the slot. And so, again, it's one of the things that we have a task in our hand.
What special problems does their offense present?
What kind of special problems?
Just because they are open their own.
I think that's the same thing you asked, huh? I said that they run the ball well and they throw the ball well. And so, you know, that's the only two things that they can do is run and throw. And so they present problems on both of those. They run the ball well and they also throw the ball well. Your offense. Keep them off the field. That's the best defense that you have for the Colts.
This game is guys, that's it. Guys.
That would be that. They kind of cut it off a little bit short, and you could kind of tell a little bit at the end that, quite honestly, I think Adalis Thomas was getting a little testy with some members of the media. I think he's a little weary of answering some of the same questions over and over again. So I would...
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I would suggest that maybe these guys are ready to play football, wouldn't you think? I kind of got that impression anyway. Jay in Rochester writes, great show. Thanks to the crappy internet at work, I'm forced to listen to the podcast instead of live, so I'm usually a day behind. So I just have a couple of quick comments. The first is about running up the score. Just look back to last year's playoffs when the Pats came back on the Chargers in the second half and then lost an 18-point lead against the Colts. They remember that and do not want to let up to avoid having it happen again. One other comment is that I'm kind of tired of the who is better, Brady or Manning arguments. They're both awesome. Why does one need to be better than the other? Of course, being a Pats fan, I prefer Brady's calm and relaxed style over Manning's hysterics, but I'm glad that I'm able to watch both great players. Thank you, Jay. And then Pat sends this one. I still can't believe how far the Pats went in the season last year, especially rewatching the AFC Championship again on NFL Network. I know Indy is a great team, the defending champs, blah, 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 but, you know, damn Rishi Caldwell's drop passes still makes me choke on thin air every time I see it. This won't happen this time around with these receivers. People want a tight game, but it really won't be. Pat says Pats 41, Colts 28. And I was the first to say the Pats won't go 16-0. I'm starting to reconsider. We'll see what happens after this week, Pat. Thanks. And William says, I'm so glad to have somewhere to go to get all my Patriot info and support. It's difficult in Mississippi with all these haters. Go Pats. Thanks again. William down in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. William, we are glad that you are with us, and we hope you stay with us each and every week right here inside the Playbook and also in Patriots.com radio. To that end, since we've had, generally speaking, all of these predictions come in, I'd be remiss if I didn't give you my thoughts. Initially, I thought this would be a really close game. Initially, I thought that this would be high scoring. I still think it may be. And I don't know why. Call it gut instinct. I think the Patriots win, and I don't think it's close. And I have complete and utmost respect for the Colts. They are the champs, and they probably should be favored until the champs are dethroned. And even if the Patriots win on Sunday, they're still the champs. And invariably, the Patriots are going to end up facing the Colts again at some point in time this season. So I'm not sure what a win this Sunday really means, other than what I said was is that the winner gets a leg up on the other in terms of home field advantage for the upcoming AFC playoffs in another couple of months. But I think that, you know, until the Patriots prove otherwise, I think it's going to be very difficult for any defense out there to slow them down. The Colts may be able to do it with a little bit of a prolonged offensive possession themselves. So to that end, I'm going to take a little starch out of the Patriots shirts, but I'm going to say Patriots 34, Colts 20. I happen to think that the Patriots are going to click on all cylinders. I think that the Patriots have something to prove. I think that because of that AFC Championship game loss last year, that I think that they have been driven as an organization, as a staff, as player development, personnel directors. I think they went out specifically to improve this Patriots team based on what we saw in that AFC Championship game. Bringing in a guy like Thomas defensively, bringing in receivers like Moss and Welker offensively, and Stallworth specifically, we need to get better because we have to beat this Colts team. This Colts team is the best team. And I think that that's what they've done. I think they're focused on that. And I think this game does mean a little bit more than your average neighborhood, everyday, regular season game. I'll say 34-20. We'll see. Sunday will show. We'll wrap up today with Colts head coach Tony Dungy in his conference call with members of Patriots media. Of course, you might recall that Coach Dungy did have a couple of things to say about the whole Spygate issue when it transpired right after the start of the season. And he does a little bit of, I don't want to say backpedaling, but let's say sidestepping this issue when he's asked some pointed questions. So I thought you'd find it very interesting, especially again,
I never said that.
When you get the full context of the questions and the answers as they come down. So we want to hear from both sides of the story. Great week of product this week, Gary. Thanks to you. Thanks to Jason and the staff for bringing in the variety of opinions and stuff that you can hear inside the playbook this week. And same Pat's time, same Pat's channel for you next Tuesday when we recap the Colts game and we look forward to the second half of the season. In the meantime, we'll wrap up today with Tony Dungy of the defending Super Bowl champ Colts.
Afternoon. Hey, how's everyone?
Good. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Excited. Fired up.
Tony, an NFL coach has to get his team ready 16 times, and theoretically they're all equal. But does a week like this and a game like this and a matchup like this heighten the senses at all and get everyone, I guess, putting their best effort forward?
Well, sure it does, and you have to balance that fine line because you do have to get up the next week as well, and you can't make it like it's the Super Bowl and you've got 8 weeks off or 12 weeks off until you start your off-season program. After the game. So you have to get up, you have to know the urgency of it and how well you're going to have to play to win a big game like this. But still, it's a regular season game, and it's you got to keep it in perspective.
From a coach's mentality, what's a more comfortable role? You've been kind of the chasee in this series and now the chased.
Well, I don't think it matters whether you're chasing or being chased. I know one thing, getting a little less public scrutiny or media scrutiny is pretty good. You don't have as much in terms of distractions that way. But in terms of trying to prepare and whether, you know, you've won the last year or they've won the last year, it's really all the same. You're looking at this year's team and trying to see what you can come up with to try to counteract that.
Coach, with the changes the Pats have made, especially on offense, does last year even matter? Is it a whole new game plan on defense you have to come up to defend these guys?
Well, they're doing some things a little bit differently in the passing game especially, but the running game is the same, and obviously their mentality is the same. They've got a few new people and guys who have brought some special skills, but it's not all that much different.
Do you sort of feel like the way you beat them last year, first of all, the fact that you beat them in the championship game, but the manner in which you did, do you feel like you sort of inspired their off-season acquisitions and maybe this run that they're on now?
I don't think so. I think everybody tries to improve their team at the end of the year. We tried to improve our team, and we got some new guys that have helped us, and they got some new guys that have helped them. So I'm not sure what their thought process was other than really just improving their team.
Tony, what kind of luck did you have in Tampa Bay defending Moss when they were in the same division?
Not very good luck. We split with them every year that I was there, and he made a lot of big catches, a lot of big plays. He was a phenomenal force, at that time, and he and Chris Carter were the focus of the offense, and they got a lot of balls. And, you know, even when you had him covered, he made big plays, and that was probably the frustrating thing.
Were you not the only team in 98 to beat them in the regular season, though?
We did beat them in 98, the year they went 15-1 in the regular season, yes.
Any, do you remember anything that you held Moss down that game?
No, I remember him catching a deep ball touchdown in the left corner of the end zone and on a 3rd and 15 or 18 when we knew the ball was going deep. But we ran the ball and we kept it away from them and tried to keep it away from their offense and try to limit their chances.
What had Hayden and Jackson shown you heading into the offseason last year that made you confident that they could take over the starting jobs from Harper and David?
Well, you know, they played a lot of football for us, and Marlon had played a lot for 2 years. Kelvin played down the stretch when Nick Harper got hurt. You know, Kelvin became the nickelback, and he actually played most of the way in the championship game and played in the Super Bowl. And you see him practice all year, and you feel like they're growing, and there was really no question in our mind they were ready to step in.
How about Jennings? He's your nickelback?
Yeah, Tim is the same type of player as those two guys. He's a year behind them. He's probably where they were last year, and he's gotten more and more of a chance to play. Very competitive guy, not real big, not as big as Marlon and Kelvin, but very, very physical and tough. And then we've got a young guy, Dante Hughes, that I think is right where Tim was last year. So that's kind of our way of doing it. You try to draft those guys that fit what you do and break them in, and the more they play, the better they get.
How heartened were you to beat the Bucs, obviously your old team, but without so many key components? What do you think that did for the psyche of the team?
You know, I think it did help us. I told the team I thought we grew in a certain regard, and that we were able to win a big game with new guys or different guys making contributions, and that's what good teams have to do. And I remember New England when they went through that stretch on defense, and they had Troy Brown playing on defense, and they were losing guys, and they just came up with a way to win. And I think really good teams do that.
How helpful was the week off for Marvin?
You know, we'll find out this week. We just felt like we weren't going to make any progress if we kept going in the direction we did, and hopefully he'll be ready to run today, and we'll see how it goes.
Losing Tarik Glenn, surprisingly, to retirement probably wasn't something you had planned on. How's Hugo been?
Tony's doing well, and the thing about him is he doesn't really get rattled when he makes a mistake or something happens that we haven't gone over. He's able to listen and make that adjustment and make corrections in mid-game, and I think he's going to be a very, very good player as he goes along. He's very athletic and fits into what we do really well.
How much does the Patriots' outside linebackers put pressure on your tackles and the pass rush and your backs and your tight ends?
Well, all four of those guys, and that's the strength of what they do. You know, they've got some great individual rushers, but now they've got five guys, actually, that can come. They can all win on individual rushes. You don't know when they're coming, and you can't just say, well, we've got to block Vrabel, and we're going to be fine, or we've got to block Colvin, and we're going to be fine. You know, they all can come, and they all can create pressure. So it does stress your protection. You have to be sharp and on top of it, and then not only know who to block, but be able to block them, which is tough.
Tony, how much is your team embracing the role of underdog in this game?
Well, I don't know that we embrace the role of favorite or underdog. I think we've been the favorites enough and known that that doesn't guarantee you wins. We've been underdogs in some cases and gone places and won. So I think what we are embracing is that the focus isn't really on us, and we're able to just go about our business, and I think that's been helpful for us.
We've seen a lot of Super Bowl champs recently have a sort of take a downturn the year after. What's been the key for you guys maintaining your focus and your record?
Well, we talked about it a little bit after we won the game in the next couple of weeks, and we didn't want to have that downturn that so many teams have had. So I think it was our veteran leadership and with our players. And one thing for me, I talked to Marv Levy at the Combine, and I asked him about going back so many times and how they were able to do it. And he said the one thing you got to guard against is trying to do too much. You know, you have the sense that, hey, we've got to improve, we've got to work harder. And the guys have played a lot of football, And so you have to make sure that they're physically ready to go. So we did rest up a little more in the off season. We started our off-season program later. We tried to go into training camp late and try to stay as fresh as we could and then count on the players just to work hard, and they've done a good job of that.
Tony, what is Adalis Thomas brought to the Patriots defense? I know you guys played against him last year in the playoffs when you were with Baltimore.
Well, you had another weapon, another versatile guy that can be a down lineman. He can rush. He can beat people on the pass rush. He can drop into coverage and intercept passes. So he just kind of gives them another interchangeable part. And plus, he's such a big guy in there. You know, it's you've got an athletic linebacker, but this is not a small athletic linebacker. He takes up a lot of space, and he plays with power. And he's just, you know, added another cog to a really good core of players.
Can you just talk about the two quarterbacks in this game? Certainly two of the best of this era.
I would have to say they are. And, you know, I didn't know much about either guy when I came over to the AFC. We hadn't played them that much. And it's just been fun for me to work with Peyton and see how he prepares and how he pushes himself to be better. And from talking to our guys that are here from New England, Dan Klecko and Adam, you know, they talk about Tom the same way. So I think you're seeing two very professional guys at the top of their game that are in great systems that take advantage of what they can do. So I think the country gets to see the best of both guys.
Tony, logic says that neither offense is likely to be completely shut down. Are you expecting to have to score in the 30s and kind of win a shootout-type game?
No, you never know. You know, we had a real hot offense, and we went in there 1 year in the playoffs, and it was, I think they beat us 20-6 or 20-3, something like that. And, you know, we had trouble getting going. And, you know, when I was at Tampa, we played the Rams 1 year, and it was whatever it was, 11-9 game or 11-6. And then the next year we played them in our place, and it was 38-35. So you never know how those games are going to go. And, you know, I know both defenses feel like they can slow the other teams down, but we'll have to see what happens.
We've all seen Bob Sanders making plays down in the box. Does the Patriots' receiving core in any way, can it blunt a safety's aggressiveness down there?
Sure they can. They spread the ball around really well, and they take advantage. When you bring the safety down in the box, that gives them some one-on-one throws, and they've got guys who can take advantage of that. So you have to mix it up and play a little guessing game with them, and you have to be able to cover those receivers outside sometimes.
Tony, prior to you guys winning the Super Bowl last year, there'd been a perception that only teams with iron-fisted coaches could win. How gratifying was it to have your style validated?
Well, I guess I was more gratified that we won more than anything else, but everybody has a different perception of what iron-fisted means, and I think you want to be disciplined, and you want to have a team that doesn't beat themselves and doesn't have penalties and mistakes, that's disciplined on and off the field, and there's a lot of ways to get that, and I think we're a pretty disciplined team, but it was, you know, it's nice if people think that there are different ways that you can do it and different ways to win. I think that's pretty good.
Has Dallas Clark blossomed this year?
Dallas has probably gotten more opportunities. He's become a very good player. He's become a guy who understands the whole offense, and we can put him in different spots. He's always been a tough matchup for people inside, but because of Marvin being out for a little bit and us maybe moving him around, I think he has gotten more opportunities and shown people what he's really capable of.
Tony, there's a perception out there that the Patriots will take any sort of controversy and will use that to their advantage. Does that at all concern you, given the accusations that have come about this week of them running up the scores?
Well, I think most people try to. Everybody's a coach, and I do. You try to take everything that happens, and if you can kind of tip it to motivation for your guys, you're going to do that. But I don't think in terms of this game that, you know, we know how good they are, and you know, when we play each other, they're always big games, and they're usually pretty good games, and I don't think anything that goes on outside the football field is really going to have that much effect.
Conversely, everybody seems to be anointing the Patriots as the best team in football.
Can you use that as to further motivate your players, or do you think they could be motivated by that?
No, I think our motivation is to try to keep winning and stay in first place. And, you know, it really doesn't matter till the end of the year. I told our team, you know, we beat Pittsburgh on a Monday night a couple of years back and put us to 11-0 or 12-0, and people were saying, well, that's it.